You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Troops to fight overseas to defend allies under limited conditions. Opponents say it violates Japan's pacifist constitution. It's being called a virtual mobile robot, and some football players are using it for practice. It moves and gets tackled just like a real player, but the engineers behind this robot say it'll help players avoid serious brain damage. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Unionville Vineyards is the perfect destination for wine tastings and tours, corporate events, birthday parties, or your special day. Located in East Amwell, New Jersey, Unionville Vineyards offers an escape from the rush of daily life and a chance to relax in the beautiful countryside. Our tasting room is open 7 days a week, 12 to 5 p.m., excluding major holidays. For more information, contact us at unionvillevineyards.com or call us at 908-788-0400.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Good afternoon. It's the sports guys. Well, hopefully it'll be the sports guys. I'm Pat Smits. I'm one of the sports guys, and it looks like I'm the only one here. Perhaps I should remind other people you may be late to where you're going if you're trying to go through Main Street in Flemington, because they're setting up for the Jazz Festival tonight. I think that may start at about 6 o'clock. Also, they were doing work on Walter Ferrand Boulevard, so that was difficult. School buses were out there, so it was difficult to get down Mine Street, which is where, if you're coming up Main, you have to go Mine Street to go around. And so lots of traffic jam up. And, of course, 31 North is always an absolute nightmare. Absolutely. Backed up for, you know, what, mile or so. Seems like it's 10 miles. But in any event, let me tell you a little bit about the weather for this wonderful weekend. And it really is going to be a gorgeous weekend. Today was supposed to be only 84 degrees. I have to tell you, I think it was higher. But it was just a beautiful sunny day, and tonight it's going to be mostly clear. Could be foggy, patchy fog, at least later on tonight. But it's, you know, when I say later on tonight, it's really around 3 or 4 in the morning, and then it will clear up, and, you know, probably start clearing up around 8 o'clock in the morning. Otherwise, it's going to be really a beautiful sunny day with a high of about 84 degrees. So it's just going to be a gorgeous day tomorrow. Tomorrow night, perhaps some clouds, but certainly no expectation of rain, which we certainly could use. But again, on Sunday, it's going to be mostly sunny, high up around 75, so not quite as warm as tomorrow. And then again, into Monday, it's a little bit cooler, about 70 degrees, and mostly sunny. So it is, we can expect a beautiful weekend, and we'll be back with the sports guys after you hear a little bit from some of our sponsors.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm a CPA with the accounting firm of Bedard Corky & Company, and I joined the Chamber to interact with new Chamber members and expand our mutual needs for business networking and giving back to the Hunterdon business community.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, ceremony officiant with CelebrationOfALifetime.com. I joined the Chamber so I can get to know you and what you're all about, and I hope you want to get to know me and what I'm all about. Then we can celebrate what we can do to make Hunterdon County better.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntertonChamberRadio.com app today.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Well, and now I'm Pat Smits, the sports guy. And looks like, at least for a while, I thought I was going to be the only sports guy. And luckily, Bill Wolfson has just joined us. So after he gets set up, we can talk sports. But one of the things I wanted to tell our listeners today, Bill, is people ask about there's certain terms that we use, and a couple people have said, well, what's the West Coast offense? And of course, as everybody who knows me knows, I'm a diehard Green Bay Packer fan, and currently my quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, and there are a number of other NFL quarterbacks operate a short ball control passing game called the West Coast, I can't say that today, offense. And my understanding is it got the name because it was developed by Coach Bill Walsh, who directed the San Francisco 49ers to what we don't like to remember, but three Super Bowls. And, of course, I've been more games than I would like to think at in San Francisco where my Packers lost. But in any event, the West Coast offense's popularity spread throughout the NFL as Walsh, he had a number of disciples, such as Mike Holmgren, again, a Packer coach, and Mike Shanahan and John Gruden began using it. And so also many college teams use variations of the offense depending on the talent of their receivers. Bill, I'd like to just ask you, why would you say that the West Coast offense has become so, I don't want to say important, but, you know, it's really looked on as a great way to play.
Well, it's...
And by the way, this is Bill Wolfson, one of the other sports guys.
Good afternoon, and thanks for the intro, Pat. I guess I jumped the gun like I usually do. But the West Coast offense is popular because it's such a flexible offense. Remember, it's a short game, a lot of short passes. It tends to pull the defense in. Then you throw a long ball for once the defense is in to a wide receiver or to a tight end. You try to get behind the secondary and into the flats. Additionally, the advantage of a West Coast offense requires that you have a good offensive line because the quarterback needs the protection, and he also needs that extra second or two to make a decision and recognize how the defense is set up. Andy Reid of the Eagles used the West Coast offense for many years, and the Eagles began returning to the playoffs year after year, only to be disappointed once they got deep in. However, they did get to a couple of Super Bowls and where they didn't win, but on the other hand, you know, it's nice to watch your team go deep into the winter still playing football. I also noticed that the Packers have used a West Coast offense most notably in games where they felt they had the better of the line play and would sometimes switch from a spread offense to a West Coast offense, Pat, if you've ever noticed.
I have.
And sometimes you also have the problem of if you have good running backs, you can establish a West Coast offense, particularly in the warmer weather or when you're playing teams that are warm climate teams, for example, Miami or the Arizona Cardinals or the Houston Texans or the Dallas Cowboys or the Atlanta Falcons. Because it's not as cold, and even your running backs can grab a pass 5-6 yards off the line of scrimmage and towards the end zone. And again, if you're trying to manage the clock properly because you're, say, in a two-minute offense and you're looking to get the ball down the field relatively quickly, but you don't really trust your wide receivers because you're playing a good secondary, a West Coast offense makes an awful lot of sense.
Right. Well, how does that play in when you have someone like Aaron Rodgers who can also run? I mean, he's great. He can get out of the pocket. He can move around. He usually can, he doesn't have to do all the short throws, which is also an advantage. But, you know, one of the things that it's always interesting to see when the quarterbacks, find that hole and, run. And some of them do and some of them never do. But how do they defend against, a quarterback that they know might challenge them by making that first down?
Well, remember, when you're playing that quarterback option, sometimes what happens is a running backs line up behind the quarterback. And the quarterback puts the ball into his abdomen as if he were to take the ball on a handoff and run, and then yanks it back. And the running back and one of the guards or the center then open a hole for a quarterback to get those 2, 3, or 4 yards they may need for a first down. The problem is your quarterback is the most important player and the most powerful player in the game. And just like in chess, you don't want to see your quarterback with a broken leg any more than you want to be playing chess and lose your queen. So you have the problem of when you are running that quarterback option, what do you do? Again, I'm a big fan of line play, and I think a good, strong offensive line is the key to everything, just like in chess, I'm not a great chess player, controlling the center of the board is the key to winning in the game. But a good, aggressive offensive line that can protect the quarterback and open holes for a running back. And remember, those holes only have to exist for 2 or 3 seconds for the running back who is quick and recognizes those holes beginning to open. You only have to keep that hole open for 2 or 3 seconds for your running back to squirt through.
And depending who the running back is, that sometimes when you talk about a hole, it's not much of a hole. It's just,
no, it's not.
And some of them are really so good. But I often, when I see Aaron Rodgers run, I often think that he's doing that. It was not the play that anyone called, obviously.
You think it's a broken play?
It is. He just doesn't have anyone to throw to, and he sees an opportunity, and he's going to take that opportunity. And he has learned to slide. I mean, I will say that he is much better now at sliding. Maybe he had a baseball coach or two who came in and, said, hey, wait a minute, you don't do this head on. We'll show you how to slide into second base.
I think President Obama even encouraged him to slide. but more importantly, when you have a quarterback who is taking off getting 6, 7, 8, 9 yards or a first down, it's because he does not want to throw in double coverage. And remember, the defense has had enough of a gap opened up by the offensive line or by deception from the wide receivers or the tight ends to create enough of a gap that a speedy quarterback can get, those 7, 8, 9, 10
So who
yards.
Do you think are the best quarterback? I mean, obviously, the worst game I saw from the standpoint of someone running when against my team was that playoff game when Kaepernick came in. And, you know, I can't remember how many yards he made. It was just a tremendous number of yards. And he just was such a surprise. I don't think he's ever done anything like that game in since then. But in any event, who do you think are the best quarterbacks for, you know, being able to assess what's out there and making those additional yards? I mean, I know Aaron is certainly one of the best. Yeah.
I would put Andrew Luck in that category. I would also put Kaepernick up there. I'm not crazy about Tony Romo. I don't think he is the kind of quarterback who would do well against a good defense. Unfortunately, he was able to lead the Cowboys against the Giants to a last minute touchdown after the Giants messed up in the red zone and had to settle for 3 points.
That was amazing that they did not run that clock. I mean, I don't think
the clock. I think somebody made a series of mistakes, or a bunch of people made a series of mistakes, starting with the coach all the way down. And that's what makes football such a fascinating game to me. Although I hate to quote him, Bill Belichick. Belichick said it's the coaches that lose the games and the players that win the games. And in this case, I think it was the coaches that lost the game. But telling your running back don't score too soon or don't score on this play, I think is always a mistake. And if Eli Manning did indeed say that to his running back, I think that was a mistake. I think he may have simply gotten mixed up on the signals. But, you know, just like in war, no plan survives contact with the enemy.
Well, wait a minute. Do you really think that, I mean, the play that I saw, that, you know, instead of running around for a few more seconds, which would have put it out of, their Cowboys would not have been able to come back. I mean, he just threw that ball beyond the end zone. It wasn't catchable, and so he stopped the clock. So I still, maybe he didn't want to take a sack, but I would have thought he could have, for the team. It didn't make sense when that play was put in, and I suppose he didn't think that the Cowboys could ever come back. And even the announcers thought that the game was won. But obviously, you don't want to take that kind of a risk. And, of course, that last drive by the Cowboys was beautiful. I mean, it was perfect.
Tony Romo picked the Giants apart like a stewed chicken. It was unbelievable. I watched that drive, and I said to myself, the Giants really need some help in their defensive backfield. They didn't seem to be covering well. I think they were very taken aback by the fact that they didn't score. It just looked like some mistakes and some real emotional letdowns by
the
team.
Only had a minute and a half to do it. No, Cowboys, am I right? No timeouts. As I recall, they had no timeouts left.
I think that's correct.
And, in fact, when the one throw, when he got out of bounds, if he had not been able to get out of bounds, the clock would have run down and that would have been it. But, my Packers played the Bears. And, if I didn't love the Packers, I would almost feel sorry for Cutler. Do you know how many times he's lost?
Nope.
To the Packers?
No.
He's got a 1-12 record.
Really?
Against the Packers. Yep.
Wow.
And who was very impressive, though, was Forte. I mean, he was in almost every play. I mean, the game was really a good game. I mean, unlike some of these games, I thought it was, a great game. And, of course, early on, Julius Peppers got a sack. Which, and since he was, since the Bears didn't sign him, I mean, he's really done a great job for the Packers. He's been in a number of plays. He did a good job last year, and he certainly didn't look his age against the Chicago.
Well, that may be so. I'd like to turn back to the Giants for a minute.
Okay.
You know,
we should wait and see if John shows up, and then you can bust him.
I don't know that he's going to show up. I think he's got to pick his daughter up at the airport. But more importantly, the NFL says that refs made two bad calls against the Giants. And the first one was when Dominic Rogers Cromartie, the Giants cornerback, learned that there was a third quarter pass interference call on him. He was shadowing Terrence Williams on a 3rd-and-4 play, and it gave the Cowboys a gift 16 yards and a first down at the 1, which led directly to a Dallas touchdown. And that, to me, was really a turning point in the game because Dallas probably would have had to kick a field goal. The next thing was the NFL should have called Cowboys safety Barry Church when he was mugging right in Daniel Fells in the end zone on the fateful third down play that resulted in Eli Manning throwing the ball away within the last 2 minutes, which should have been pass interference. So I think all the stars lined up bad for the Giants.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're neither team. I didn't watch the entire game, but I didn't think either team looked that good, frankly.
I didn't think Dallas played well, and now Dallas has a critical injury with their best wide receiver. So I think Dallas is pretty vulnerable this coming weekend.
And who are they playing this weekend?
Oh, let's take a good look. A real good look, because I haven't really checked yet.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that my Packers are playing Sunday night, and they're playing the Seahawks in Green Bay.
Well, that's going to be
so
a good
that
game.
Should be. Well, you know why I'm. Look, I'm so glad that they're playing in Green Bay, not in Seattle. However, you know, Seattle is coming off a loss that they never expected. I mean,
that was a shocking loss. I didn't think they were
never expected the Rams to beat them. They certainly didn't. So I think they're going to be, you know, really, you know, up to make this a 1-1. And of course, it'd be great if the Packers go 2-0. Because
no doubt about it.
Then the next week they're playing on the 4th of October. They're playing in, I don't know where they're playing the next week.
The Jets.
But they're playing the 4th of October. They're playing in San Francisco.
Oh,
and
well, you know, you have some very interesting things coming up. You got Cowboys playing the Eagles, and Dallas was 8-0 on the road last year, and you know they have Dez Bryant out. But you know Tony Romo still has guys to throw to, and the Eagle defense did not look good last week.
No, you're right.
They didn't look good at all. I think there's some work to be done, and Chip Kelly has his work cut out for him, I think, because, you know, this is a 4:00 Sunday game. It's going to be an interesting game to watch.
Are they playing in Philadelphia?
I think they're playing in Philly.
Well, I always...
They are playing in Philly, excuse me, and the reason I think that it'll be close because I think I may have caught a sneeze from you.
Salute.
Pardon me.
I think there's something in here because we'll have to check because, honestly, I all of a sudden I'm starting to sneeze also.
Well,
pardon me.
Well, that was the way most people think of about the Eagles, and
you know, as Eagle fans, though, Pat, we have learned to take it. We're not masochists; we're just tough. The important thing, though, is that we've learned that the Eagles have a decent quarterbacking. They can get the balls out to the receivers. They've got a good running game. Although, why Chip Kelly didn't use DeMarco Murray more in the first half, I don't know, because remember, the Eagles really played two games. The first half was terrible.
Oh,
they came out as cold as ice. The second half, I thought they were going to run away with the game, and I'm surprised that they lost. I did not see the first half. But You know, there are some people picking now the Giants over the Falcons this week coming up, and I think it's going to be an interesting game. Meanwhile, you know, Steelers at the Niners. I think the Steelers are not a good team this year, and I think that the Niners get well on them. The game that is really interesting to me is the Colts over the Jets. At the Jets. I think the Jets are going to show that they're for real, even though the Colts are angry and they've got something to prove.
I actually think that if I had to pick so far from what I've seen, and it's not been a whole lot, but if I had to pick a New York team, I would say that the Jets are a better team than the Giants. I really would.
I don't think there's any question right now. I think maybe except as quarterback. I would agree with you. I think the Jets still have something to prove at quarterback. Although I thought they played very well against a weak team. They ate them up early and didn't look back. Remember, the NFL is so funny that on any given Sunday anybody can win. That's the old saying, and it sounds trite, but it's true.
No, it really is true. I mean, there's no question. I mean, frankly, I think everybody. What was the prediction with the Seahawks? I mean, how many? I mean, they were certainly favored. What was the point spread there?
I don't remember, but I can tell you that the Jets are coming home against the Colts, and they're going to Indianapolis on Monday night as 7-point underdogs.
Oh, so they're. Who, the Jets are?
The Jets are 7-point underdogs, and I think that if someone was going to bet that game, I would take the Jets and give the points, because I think the Jets are definitely going to cover, and they may very well win. I don't usually bet, and I certainly wouldn't bet against my team, and you know that I enjoy watching the Jets because they put the fun in dysfunctional. Although I like Todd Bowles, and I like his style. He's real low-key, which after Rex Ryan is refreshing, although not quite as entertaining. He certainly has a much more controlled locker room. He certainly has people who seem to want to play his system, and I'm looking forward to a good Jets season. The Giants, on the other hand, I really thought they should have beat Dallas. And it's rare that you see a team like the Giants, admittedly not a strong team this year, still manage to beat themselves. And
well, you know, the thing that I find when I'm watching a game, I mean, obviously if it's a Packers game, I would like the Packers to be out ahead 40-0. I don't want any surprises. I hate a close game. But when you're watching a team that, you know, you don't really care who wins, you want to watch a good game.
And you want to be entertained.
And that was, I just did not think that the Eagles and the Cowboys, just wasn't a good game. And, granted it was the first game of the season, so, you know, everybody's trying to still shake out. But I was just not impressed with either team. Now, I didn't I'm trying to think of what other games that I watched.
I'll tell you one game that I'm curious about. I did not get to see it, but the Colts got ambushed in Buffalo by Rex Ryan. And they went 0-1, and it seems to me that they're going to be like wounded animals this weekend. Monday night, they'll have had 7 full days to think about losing to the Bills. And, you know, the Bills surprised me. I thought it would be a runaway. But they managed to beat Indianapolis, and suddenly Indianapolis looks a whole lot shakier. And to be honest, Pat, earlier this year, before the season started, I thought the Colts, coming off of 3-11-5 seasons and with playoff games that they went deep into, including the AFC team, I thought they were going to. I think they're going to end up in the Super Bowl this year.
The Colts?
I thought so until I saw how they played against the Bills. I saw some of the highlights, and they were not impressive. But I think the Jets have to expect a very significant bounce back from Andrew Luck and company.
Oh, I think you're right. And, you know, Andrew Luck's a good quarterback. So, you know, he wants to get that team into the playoffs. So we shall see. I just, as I said, I'm not happy. I am happy that the Seattle lost, but it would be a little bit easier if they had a couple more games before they have to go to Green Bay.
Yeah, understood. You know, the interesting thing, too, with the Jets is Fitzpatrick is a savvy quarterback. You got Chris Ivory and Brandon Marshall running the ball. And we know Andrew Luck can put up points, but I think the Jets can put up points as well. They scored 31 points against the Browns, and maybe the Browns are not a good team, but they're also not the worst team in the league. I think the Browns will win some games. I think they're just beginning to pull themselves together. So I'm looking for a very exciting Monday night, and quite honestly, that's the game I want to focus on, as well as the Eagles.
Well, I think the Packer, Seahawks game, you know, that's a Sunday night game. I think that's really going to be that really could be a great game as far as anyone who wants to watch football.
Yeah. What do you think about Chiefs and the Broncos? I'm an Andy Reid fan.
Well, I like Andy also, so I'm not sure. I haven't followed much of what's going on so far this season, but I'm always hoping.
Bless you. Boy, we must be allergic to each other, Pat. I wasn't sneezing till I walked in here.
Me either. So let's play.
Let's play some ads while we sneeze. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, everybody. This is really not fun.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. Scary moments Friday morning at a couple of Kentucky schools. Police say a bogus 911 call and reports of an active shooter caused quite a stir. Officers descended on Western High School and Waller Williams Environmental School in Louisville to ensure the safety of students. The schools were put on lockdown as police searched the campus for any danger. No shots were fired and no one was hurt. Both schools were soon given the all clear. Police are investigating who made the alarming call. Power remains out for tens of thousands of people in Chile after a deadly earthquake on Wednesday. At least 11 people died and more than 170 homes were destroyed. The 8.3 magnitude quake triggered tsunami warnings along western South America. A wave almost 5 meters high hit north of the capital. Some 1 million people evacuated coastal regions thanks to almost immediate government warnings. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Hi, I'm Joan London. When I needed to find senior care for my mom, I really struggled to find the right fit until I found an advisor, someone who had been through this before. That's why I recommend A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service. They have experts who will help you ask the right questions and find the right place. Call A Place for Mom today.
To speak with the local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-7591. That's 1-800-469-7591.
A Place for Mom has helped over 200,000 families find the right senior care for their parents, from assisted living to independent living, even Alzheimer's care, and have local advisors that can help explain your options at no cost to you.
To speak with the local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-7591. That's 1-800-469-7591.
Call today.
And we're back, and I'm Bill Wolfson, and I'm going to tell you about something that really excites me, which is the Subway Series. The Yankees are invading Citi Field in a little more than an hour to play the New York Mets, and it's going to be, for once, a late-season Subway Series, fighting for all the marbles. I've seen the Yankees play the Mets many, many, many times, including a World Series Game 2 where Roger Clemens threw a broken bat at Mike Piazza as he strolled towards first. So, you know, it's going to be exciting. Now, the real question is the Mets are trying to avoid a collapse like they had in 2007, where they were seven games up with 17 games to go and didn't make the playoffs. And the Yankees were 7 games up at the trading deadline of the 31st of July, and what happened was that the Yankees ended up are now 3 back of Toronto and looking to gain some ground. Now, the Mets have been one of the hottest teams in baseball, and since the trading deadline, so are the Blue Jays. So the Yankees have 7 games coming up that will make or break their season. They have to go 5-2 in order to really gain some ground against the Jays and not just be a wild card winner. Remember, the wild card game is just one game to see who moves on, and anything can happen in that single game. So it looks like tonight the Yankees are putting Tanaka out there, who has been their best pitcher. Oh, the really exciting thing about Tanaka is that when he's unhittable. He is really a tough, tough pitcher. The Mets are going to send Steven Matz to the mound, and Steven Matz is 3-0 for the year. He's got a 1.88 earned run average, whereas Tanaka's 12-6 and has a 3.40 average, rather earned run average. It is very, very, very exciting. The big pressure is going to be Sunday on Matt Harvey, who is facing a spotlight unlike that A-Rod might hit. The interesting thing about Steve Matz, who will be going for the Mets tonight, is he's from Long Island. This is his first Subway Series. He's got a fresh arm, and we'll see whether he's ready to handle the pressure. Another big question in my mind is Jacoby Ellsbury. He got 2 hits a couple of nights ago in Tampa. Does that mean his slump is over? Who knows? We also have a very pleasant surprise in Greg Bird, who has replaced Mark Teixeira very ably at first base and has managed to also help the Yankees with his bat. He's already got 7 home runs. There are going to be some interesting matchups here. The starting pitching, I think, goes to the Mets, only because Steve Matz looks pretty good. Matt Harvey, we really don't know what will happen on Sunday because he's thrown an awful lot of innings, and they shut him down for a while. He's also back from some injuries. And the Mets also have one of my favorites, Noah Snydergaard, who has posted at home a 2.15 earned run average. So there's some pretty good pitchers out there. Whether Michael Pineda will manage the Mets to manage to handle the Mets since he's back from a disabled list, I don't know, because he's really been struggling. Further, you got C.C. Sabathia, who has also struggled, but now that he has a brace, is he going to continue his late season surge after his very tough first half? I think relief pitching goes to the Yankees. I like Dylan Betances and Andrew Miller, and I think right now they're the best 1-2 combo in baseball, despite Andrew Warren, who could end up in the rotation. Once again, if Sabathia, Ivan Nova, or Pineda falter, you're going to see that hurt the bullpen. The Mets bullpen just is not, I think, where the Yankees bullpen is. You've got Juris Familia, who's been great in the ninth inning as a closer, and former Yankee Tyler Clippard is a reliable setup option who joins Addison Reed. The bench is going to be interesting. Because they're in Citi Field, Alex Rodriguez can't bat as the designated hitter, so he's going to be coming off the bench and pinch hitting. Also coming off the bench are John Ryan Murphy, Chris Young, and Dustin Axley. We also have Rico Noel, who is sort of the designated pinch-running specialist. Kelly Johnson and Juan Urrutia have bolstered the Mets' depth for a while over the past couple of months. And there's also Michael Cudjier, who is a righty hitter coming off the bench. As far as managing, I think both managers should be managers of the year. Terry Collins has done a great job with the Mets this year, because remember, up until the trading deadline, the Mets were just so-so. But he's managed to hold it together. And Joe Girardi has worked magic with the Yankees, keeping them going despite the injuries, the aging players, the pitching breaking down a couple of times.
Yeah, but are they going to beat Toronto?
Well, that's always the issue. Right after the Mets, they get tormented by Toronto again, I think, in Yankee Stadium, isn't it? So, you know, we're going to see some interesting years, things happening. The Yankees lost 2 out of 3 in Toronto. Tanaka pitched 7 shutout innings in the last game to save some face for the Yankees.
Did they actually stop the 11-game winning streak? Was that the Yankees or
team? Toronto was going to run the table. They had won 11 straight games, and then they ran into the Yankees, and in the first game of that series, the Yankees broke their 11-game win streak
Was it the first or second game of that season, series?
I think it was the first game of that series.
They had lost. The Yankees had lost, and then... But that was really pretty amazing. I mean, not many teams can go 11 straight.
No, that's really surprising in baseball, where you play every day. And remember, you're playing 161, 162 games. And what happens is, you know, you win tomorrow. I'm really excited about the Yankee shortstop, D.D. Gregorius, because he has rebounded from a terrible start at the plate and actually managed to be a respectable batter. And he handles his position well. He's got a good glove. He's certainly no good glove, no hit shortstop. He got used to the American League and his position. And Chase Headley, who plays third for the Yanks, had a brutal September. He's only hitting about 180. And he doesn't seem to be contributing at all at the plate, but in the field he's very steady, and obviously the Yankees are not going to put Alex Rodriguez back in at third just to replace him, because as Joe Torre has said on the radio this afternoon, he doesn't think Rodriguez really can handle playing in the field that much anymore, but he's still a great hitter. A-Rod has given the Yankees 31 home runs.
So wait a minute. So what do they do with a player like that who's, you know, really not that great in the field, but, you know, still can hit?
He is a pinch hitter for the later innings, and maybe they insert him at third towards the end of the game, or he gets 1 or 2 at-bats, and hopefully nothing gets hit to him. I don't think A-Rod has completely lost it in the field, but they tried him at first base this spring, and he was in a few games, and he was totally uncomfortable.
Well, that's
at first.
Tough. I mean, first base can be really tough.
Remember, you've got to focus on the ball coming. You've got to dig it out of the dirt, and you've got a batter who's charging down the line at you. So you really have to focus.
Well,
plus, you've got
to
hold people on.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. The other thing is, you really, you know, you have to hold them on that base so that they're not stealing second. And it's pretty, you know, you have to be a pretty versatile player and a great player, I think, to play first base.
And even though a lot of first basemen are put there because they don't have a great arm, you still need to make that throw to the plate. Or how many times do you see a first baseman playing a little deep and a grounder's hit to him with a runner on first, and he's got to make a good throw to second to the shortstop and sprint to first to get there ahead of the runner to complete a 3-6-3, 3-5-3 double play or 3-6-3 double
right.
play.
I didn't know that was the scuttlebutt, that you can put someone who doesn't have a great arm on first base. Granted, they're not going to put them out in center field. But
no, certainly not. But first basemen also have to dig balls out of the dirt. They've got to also be quick enough to charge in for a bunt and then toss it to either the second baseman covering or to the pitcher covering.
But I really think also, you know, they have to, as you said, they have to keep that person on first base. They have to be able to, you know, keep them honest, you know, because
that's exactly right.
If they don't, you know, not only are they going to steal, but depending on the hit, you know, they may go to third base rather than, you know, getting held up at second.
Remember what they teach runners. you're looking to create a hole by always looking like you're about to take off and steal, or that you're going to run on every pitch, because what that does is that forces the first baseman to hold you on, and therefore you've got the whole, you've got a larger portion of the right side of the infield open, because the first baseman's not playing back on the grass as you would if there was nobody that he had to hold on. So I always think baseball's got more strategy than people think.
There's no question about it. People that really know baseball, that, and you know, that isn't me. I used to be fairly, you know, versatile. But the other thing that it seems to me that a pitcher who knows that player who's on first base can steal, it seems to me that also has to get them, you know, a little bit, I don't know, would you say nervous or aware, or, you know, perhaps makes it more difficult for that pitcher if, in fact, they know that guy on first base is, you know, has a good chance of stealing. So it changes the game. I mean, it sometimes is a little subtle, but it does seem to me if you're watching it and they know who's going to stay on that base and not try anything. And I'm trying to remember some of the old Braves that used to be so much fun to watch on.
Well, there was
base.
A great first baseman, as Joe Adcock.
Oh, Joe Adcock was a great. He was terrific. But I'm trying to think of who on that team used to be great at stealing. I'll think about it. Oh, Joe Adcock was a big guy.
Oh, and yeah.
You know, he could. His range was so.
I thought Joe Adcock was about 6'5 or 6'6. And if you ever. I remember having his baseball card as a kid, and it was like a full picture of him, and his arms looked like they went practically down to his knees.
Well, especially if you ever saw him, and I did see Braves games as a kid, and, you know, when he was out there, I mean, he was as big, and there were a number of players that, now I don't remember, and maybe he was bigger than I thought, but I never thought Hank Aaron was that big, or Billy Bruton, and maybe they were. And, of course, you know, all of the teenage girls had a big crush on Eddie Matthews.
Well, Eddie Matthews could have been a movie star.
Yeah, and not only that, he was single. So, I mean, you know, that was, you know, single. Now, I never thought he had a great arm.
Eddie Matthews was a third baseman, wasn't
right.
he?
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that as a third baseman for the Milwaukee Braves and then the Atlanta Braves, and probably he got his start in Boston.
Yeah, I think
I don't remember.
Yeah, he came with the team as far as I know.
You had to make a long throw, particularly if you grabbed a ground ball down the line and you had been playing back. You had to make a long throw to first base, and that's not something for a guy with a bad arm.
Well, I don't know if he had a bad arm. I just don't remember him having a great arm.
Well, you had to compare him with other third basemen like Ken Boyer, who was a brother of a third baseman and the brother of the Yankees, Cleet Boyer, and Ken Boyer played for the Cardinals. Cleet Boyer, of course, was a Yankee and had an excellent arm and played third base wonderfully. He had the ability to make a throw from his knees and get the ball over to Bill Moose, Gowron, or to whoever else might have been playing third, like John Blanchard or sometimes Elston Howard or even Yogi Berra. But the important thing is if you're playing third, you really need to have a cannon for an arm these days because the runners are just so fast and they go down that line in, you know, 3-4 seconds. I mean...
Aren't they much more athletic today? I mean, I never thought of baseball players being terribly athletic. I mean, there were a lot of them that were, you know, look at Babe Ruth. I mean, they could hit, but they were pretty pudgy, and, you know, all of the, at least the guys who played Legion ball, and, you know, every small town had, you know, had baseball teams, Legion, American Legion, or other
sure.
ball teams. And, you know, they probably spent as much time in the bar as they spent on the field.
Well, somebody once said to me that they loved baseball so much because what other game could you play and drink a beer at the same time on a hot day? And there's something to be said for that, although I would not recommend playing baseball and drinking more than one beer, because I've seen people get hit in the face with a ball or get themselves really hurt because they weren't paying attention. And, you know, as Shakespeare said about liquor, it increases a desire, but it taketh away the performance. Although, well, I don't think he was thinking about baseball.
Yeah, but, you know, because of all those guys who, you know, were notorious, not only baseball, but some of the football guys. I mean, you know, they weren't in the kind of shape that they are today. Of course, what they're getting paid, these astronomical amounts of money, and, you know, it's almost, to me, it's really amazing that any of them are, you know, end up doing drugs or anything today, because they have such a risk. I mean, back in the day, these guys were not making that much money. Most of them were working, at least the football players, they were working off season.
Either that or the baseball players were also going back to the family farm and helping mom and dad out, or they were selling cars or working. Like Ed Cranepool was working as a stockbroker when he wasn't playing for the Mets. In fact, he once called up a relative of mine to try to get him interested in buying some stock, and I think my relative became a customer of his, which was sort of neat. And I still have an autograph of Ed, picture of Ed Cranepool somewhere that I was given when I was a 12-year-old, because my relative had gone to his office and had asked for a picture. But, you know, it's interesting. A lot of these guys then drank heavily and still managed to accomplish. And I know I've said it on the air before, and I'll say it again. Alcohol is not exactly a performance-enhancing drug. So when you think of some of the people who played baseball and who were heavy drinkers, like Babe Ruth or Mickey Mantle or Billy Martin, you compare their achievements with those today, I think they were greater players because they didn't have performance-enhancing drugs. He didn't have steroids. All they had was raw talent. Babe Ruth, of course, was famous for downing 12 hot dogs during the break between doubleheaders. And he also would go out all night and carouse, come back, lay in the shower while the water played over him, and go out and hit 3 home runs and play right field very well without an error and make some good throws.
Well, you know, the only problem is there was all that mystique that you know, you had to have that, you know, you had to do that in order to be a great player, or the great players did that. And I'm not sure it was a great, some of the kids who emulated that, of course, were never going to be the great baseball players.
That's
but they
true.
Certainly, you know, got the drinking down pat. The athletes today are, you know, really well trained. You look at these college kids, and, you know, it's pretty amazing.
It is indeed. I was at a small Pennsylvania college where my nephew went, and he competed in the high hurdles and track, and he missed being a small college All-American by a very narrow margin. But what he did was walk me through the training facilities, and I've been through the Eagles' new facility at NovaCare Center, and, you know, the small college that he went to compared very favorably.
Really?
Yeah. You name it, they had it. I was very impressed. But, you know, sports are different these days. When you have the great glass eye of television and cable television throwing so much money at sports teams, and when you realize that these are billion-dollar industries, they can afford these facilities, and they can afford to give these world-class players literally the best of everything. So when it comes to training facilities and coaching and things like that, I'm beginning to believe that even with free agency, a lot of these teams are really interchangeable. And when you root for your team, you're really rooting for the laundry rather than a player, because
no,
they don't
I
seem
don't
to stay with
that.
The team for that
but
long.
We're going to have to sign off, and I'm going to leave you with one thought.
Go right ahead. That's the only one you have.
Who do you think makes more money, Tom Brady or his wife?
Well, I would think it's his wife.
You're right.
She's better looking.
Well, you know, that's as much as Tom Brady earns, she actually out-earns him. So I guess maybe, you know, at home, you know, it's pretty amazing, but one of the higher players in professional football, his wife out-earns him. Kind of something I like to see. So with that, we'll sign